You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Part two of Ray Farmer coming up, but we'll get to a couple calls quickly. D in Columbus, welcome to the show. What's up, D?
Can I make a statement regarding Ray Farmer's conference?
Yes.
And here's my deal. What was most alarming is me. What are his expectations of his first round draft pick? You know what I mean? It's like he brought these guys in. He was like, well, if they grow, they grow. If they don't, you know, that's perfectly fine. And I found that problematic because apparently he didn't know what the status of this Cleveland Browns team is over the last 5 to 6 years, you know, not having a lack of playmakers. You know what I mean? We've been losing every year. You know, some years we didn't score touchdowns, and that was really concerning to me.
I think he was trying to preach patience, and I understand your frustration. And when you look at the track record of the first-round picks, yeah, you would want to say, like, I don't know what you want to hear, but I think it's something a little stronger than perhaps you did hear. I think you want to hear, like, I can't believe that we're at where we are. But at the same time, you know, it is true that people do improve significantly, you know, as their career goes on. There are guys who maybe weren't necessarily great rookies that have gone on to have good NFL careers. The issue for the Browns is you needed these guys to come in and be good right away because that's what you need. You needed impact players. I mean, you go back to the interview we did with Jim O'Neill. He said, I don't care who we take at 19 as long as he's an impact player. We took a backup offensive lineman in the first round, which is a luxury pick that maybe good teams who are doing succession planning would do. For example, if the Browns were a Super Bowl team, you thought Alex Mack was going to move on next year. You had two first-round picks, so you want to have a smooth transition and not have a drop-off in 2016. You draft Cam Irving there, and you're in good shape. That's not what the Browns need. That's not the position they were in.
No, it's not. And as I mentioned, and you just did as well, you know, there's only a handful of teams that pick at the bottom of the first round that have the luxury to just take a guy, you know, and in some cases they take their guy that fits their scheme that will play like Malcolm Brown, you know, in the New England Patriots.
Sure.
They don't need him to be a stud. They need him to be a guy who's playing at a high level when he's on the football field for an undefeated football team.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. One more call here before we hear from Ray Farmer, and we'll go to John in Parma Heights. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Quick question, and I'll hang up and listen. What would you guys think of putting a little package together, maybe a pick and a player or just a pick, to try to go get Kaepernick? That way, whoever the GM is in April or March can fill some of the other gaps in the draft. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
You go first. Go first, because I know that you know,
well, first of all, the trade deadline is over, but you could do it in the offseason.
Right.
The other thing to remember is he could be cut before April 1st. If he is, the Niners would not be on the hook for any guaranteed money to him. So there's probably
neither
a better
would
chance.
His next team.
Right. You'd be free agent. You renegotiate his contract. There's a good chance that's more likely than somebody taking on that contract.
I agree. That's
playing.
Like a Cutler-ish type of contract. Not so steep, but his play as of recent doesn't coincide with how big that dollar is.
I wouldn't mind giving Kaepernick a look, especially with Johnny, if you aren't in a position to get the quarterback that you want in the draft, because I think you're going to train them in similar ways, and I think they have similar learning curves that they both must go through. Kaepernick's shown that he can be successful in the right system and right environment.
But he's a guy, he needs playmakers around him. But he had Vernon Davis playing his best football. They acquired Anquan Boldin to be the possession receiver. Who else did they have outside?
But it was at Crabtree.
Stevie Johnson.
Crabtree.
Right?
Stevie Johnson was just last year.
Just last year.
But he wasn't successful, though, ultimately, because he was successful because they had a dominant defense and their offensive line
was one of the best in the league. Ayupati.
Maulers.
Davis.
Physical, and they ran the ball.
Joe Staley.
Yes.
I mean, they invested in that offensive line.
Alex Boone,
exactly. They had, Frank Gore playing his best football of his career.
Gore, right. They had that kind of physicality, and you had, at the time, two great blocking tight ends. People forget how good of a blocker Delanie Walker was, and he was the second tight end there, and he's gone on to be very successful in Tennessee. But you had what fit for that team and kind of what fits for Carolina right now or what fit for Seattle. That's what you need. But if Colin Kaepernick comes here and was playing behind an offensive line that wasn't giving him time to play, that's what's happening right now in San Francisco, and it doesn't matter.
You're right.
And he has better playmakers there.
That's true. And I think if we've learned anything this year, is we don't really know who we are yet. You know, we've talked all offseason about culture, playing like a Brown, great defense, and running the football, and we're all but that. We're better throwing the football. We're more creative throwing the football. We're more innovative. You know, we can't stop the run. Yes, we can turn the ball over. We didn't have our best day on third down, but we can, you know, and I think, so do you make those kind of moves not knowing who we are, or do you draw a line in the sand and say, this is who we have to be, and let's go out and acquire the guys that fit that?
Yeah.
Because you can't say, with us running the football and playing great defense, is Dwayne Bowe really that much of a value to be able to spend $9 million on?
Well, you could say he's a good downfield blocker, maybe. Big guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll get in someone's way for a $500,000.
I will, too. I probably won't be effective. I'll just do a lot of cut blocking.
There you
I'll
go.
Just dive with their legs.
A little high low.
Yeah, a little high low, exactly. All right. Let's hear now from General Manager Ray Farmer, part two of his press conference from yesterday.
So you said that everybody, you want guys to earn their spot. Why do you think the guys like Justin Gilbert, Johnny Manziel haven't earned a spot on the field? And are you disappointed that they haven't done so yet?
Like I said, I won't say I'm disappointed. I'm also eager to see what guys do going forward. And that growth, like I said, growth patterns happen for different guys at different points in time. I could take you through a number of stories of guys that have kind of gone from less than stellar rookie campaigns to being Hall of Fame players. So the question becomes, is the movie over after a single season, or do we got to continue to work with guys and give them an opportunity to grow? That growth, and as they continue to show that they're making the necessary strides, that's what you believe in. And I think that's what we believe in, and that's what we'll continue to work towards.
Are you surprised, though, that a year and a half later, Justin would be behind guys who are undrafted free agents on the depth chart right now, a year and a half later?
Yes. Candidly, yes. At the end of the day, you know, we have a you want guys to play. You want them to play right away. You want to put them in there, and you want them to go to the Hall of Fame and the Pro Bowl. I wish they all were, again, to give you the easy one, I wish they all were Joe Thomas. You just come in, and guess what? You plug and play. Goes to the Pro Bowl. He never misses a snap, and the movie never stops. But that's not the reality for 99% of the people in this league, is that they have a learning curve, and some guys are steeper than others. And you know, when he gets his opportunities, I think he's embraced the notion of what he's had and the opportunities he's been given. So as he continues to give his opportunities, he'll continue to grow with those.
What do you feel you've done? Feel like Johnny Manziel can be a quality starting quarterback?
I do. And as Johnny continues to work through and do the pieces that he needs to do, then he'll continue to demonstrate those. I think he's done a much better job this year of doing exactly what he's been asked to do inside and around us. While we see him here in the building, Johnny's been doing the right things that we want to see him do from a learning and a growth perspective. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
What do you feel like you've done to make this team better and to make this team better in the future?
I think what I've done is I've helped kind of bring a culture to Cleveland, I would think in my mind, of the guy that actually wins the job should get it. And, you know, as you produce and you get guys those opportunities, you'll continue to unearth good players. It's the reality for me that a third of the league is made up of college free agents. So it's not all about, you know, the first round pick or the second round pick and all the draft picks. So a third of the guys that play in this league weren't even drafted. So it doesn't mean we get them all right as far as how we select them. But if you give those opportunities to the right players and they earn them and they demonstrate that they're worthy of moving forward with, that we're going to continue to build and move it the right way. Our problem right now is we just got to find a way to finish it. We're in it. We got to finish it.
You said in the past that, you know, Johnny Manziel needs to mature. So with the latest incident, he's being investigated by the NFL to see if he violated the personal conduct policy. With all that said, are you second-guessing whether he's growing up the way you guys need him to?
No, I'm not second-guessing that at all. Again, I would tell you that from the interactions here in the building and the time that I spent with him and what I've seen of him here recently is definitely positive. And, you know, I understand where the league is and you know, we're going to continue to kind of listen and wait to see what that all comes out. But, yeah, I think that he has matured. He has.
What do you think the problem with the run defense is as a former linebacker?
Oh, that's an interesting one. As a former linebacker, I would tell you that, you know, you watch the game and you watch kind of what's happened and, you know, you – You want guys. You want things to be differently. You know, right now we haven't found a way to stop it. We haven't, and doesn't mean we're not trying. It doesn't mean the guys aren't playing hard. We got to find an angle that gets us the result that we're looking for. Like I said before, it's not about effort. It's not about want to. It's not about desire. You know, time put in or coaching scheming or trying to work at it. Everybody's digging for the same result. Everybody's looking for the same result, which is just a way to find the answer to the question. Right now, we haven't found it.
Ticked off all those things. I mean, so does it come down to talent? Is there enough talent on this team to play better run defense?
Is there enough talent on the team to play better run defense? Like I said, I think from my perspective, it's all about trying to find the right mix of kind of how we get to the end of the road. We've had people here. We've moved on from people. We've brought in people. We've kept people. And, you know, we got to find a way to get the right combination of what we need to get the job done.
Has Jimmy Haslam spoken to you at all about where things are with this team recently? And are the responses that you've been giving us to some of these questions, is that basically how you've responded to him?
Yes. Yes, I have spoken to Jimmy, and the same answers that I give you, I give to Jimmy, that we're digging in this building as much as we can and turning over every stone to find the answers to the questions that need to be answered.
Do you think that Jimmy will be able to state your case in this as the losing, if the losing continues and the seats grow warmer, will you be able to, you know, state your case to Jimmy and say, look, I picked a lot of guys that just aren't out there. I mean, what if Johnny turns out to be good? What if Justin turns out to be good? Next year, are we
going to
have that time?
That's the great point of all of it, is that I don't know the answer to that question. Like I said, I'm going to work and do the best I can and work hard and continue to try to find players that make the Cleveland Browns win. And that's what it comes down to. You mean you got to go through this whole thing and you got to see the movie to the end. The reality is that my seat's no warmer than it was the day I got it. That's a perception that everybody has for me and not a perception I have for myself. So as I work through it, I'm going to continue to do the best that I can with what I have. And again, it sounds corny or it sounds like it's a scoutism. I'm just going to grind at it. I'm going to continue to try to find players, whether it be the college draft, whether it be via free agency, whether it be the guys that are internally in this building that get a chance to step up and demonstrate that they're capable. We're just going to continue to push in the right directions and the right ways, and we'll let the proof stand for itself. Like I said, this league's about winning. It's no secret. And when you don't win, it's no fun. Like, it's not like we're having fun sitting in here because we're 2-6. That's not the case.
This already a few times over, maybe, especially when you said that, you know, you're close and you need to finish yesterday. But aside from that, you know, people sit through the 24-0 segment of the most recent game, and they go through their latest 2-6, and there have been a lot of those. And come away from a game like that, the most recent game, saying, and I heard it in kind of these exact words, where do we hang our hat as Browns fans, is what a lot of people are saying. Where do they hang their hat in terms of hope that it's not going to be 2-6 next year, and there's a light at the end of the tunnel that's not a million miles away?
I would contend that light is much closer than that, and one instance, one circumstance doesn't dictate that. Again, I said this earlier, we just haven't found a way to finish it, to push it over the top. Last year we did. We won some games that were tight, you know, close quarter games, if you will. We haven't found a way to cross that threshold. So as we cross that threshold, then things could be different. They're not. The reality is we're not. We are a 2-6 football team, and that's not good enough. I firmly believe that. I know that's what this league is about. The reality is that we got to stick together, circle the wagons, and figure out how we can do better. And that's all of us. That's everybody circling the wagons. Are the college scouts doing enough on their end? Are the pro scouts doing enough on their end? Am I doing enough on my end? Are we supporting the coaches the right way? And every man's got to look at himself and decide if he's not doing his part or doing enough. That's really what it comes down to.
Can I ask a follow-up? That was kind of an important question. Somebody asked me to ask you, what are you doing to support Pitt?
What am I doing to support Pitt?
Yeah.
This is kind of traditional, but we put together in advance. We look at the next opponent in detail to try to help the coaches so that they can prepare when it's time for them to prepare for the game plan. And as we go through post-game after action reports, as we go through pre-game analysis of how we should try to attack the next opponent, I give him whatever advice and resources I can. If he needs something to happen from a player perspective because this player's hurt or this player's out or this guy's missing and we need to go in a different direction, we have those conversations and we work in unison to try to put the best roster together to go into a game. Again, there's no decision that, you know, I make in a vacuum, and I think Pet would say the same. I don't think he just sits up there and decrees that this is what's going to happen. We have those conversations, and then those conversations lead to the decisions that we make.
Before you left for your suspension, obviously it was right as the roster was kind of coming together. Did you talk to Mike at all about prior, and what you guys wanted to do there, if it would come down to one or two guys? Or was that a decision that they made on their own, or how did that come down?
We definitely had numerous conversations before I left. Again, I know people wonder kind of how did things work. I have full faith in the guys that work in and around me. So all of those guys, the processes that we come up with, how we work through things, a lot of things, I'll say whiteboarded. So you get in a room, you write out kind of where you're at, what's happening, who's on the roster, who's not, et cetera, and where those kind of balancing or teeter-totters are at. A plan is then created for what should happen, when it should happen, and how we should kind of go through it, and to know when I think those guys executed. That's really what it comes down to. From my perspective, I thought things went really smoothly while I was gone as far as watching from the outside in. You just kind of watch, and you're like, okay, wow, that did happen. Okay, whoa, that happened too. So, I mean, couldn't do anything, but I definitely left some instruction and some comments as to where I thought things should be. But again, it's not like I make these decisions on my own. So the group and the plan moved along according to how I thought it was going to move when I did leave.
Along those lines, were you in on the, I guess it would have to be a future plan, but the Austin Davis extension was done when you were gone?
Yeah, it was done when I was gone. But again, from the candid part is that I've liked Austin Davis for a while. So it's not like he was new to us in the building as far as thinking about him. You know, as we looked at it and we talked about it, we had those conversations before I left of, you know, again, this magical word again, trade. Do you trade for a guy? Do you try to acquire him? And we just happened to have an opportunity to get him in the building, and then we had an opportunity to hold on to him and re-sign him. So I think all of those things took place, and I was excited to see it happen while I was gone.
Were you talking about Johnny admitting in this latest incident that he was drinking during the day? Do you guys reasonably count on him going forward to be here for the future?
Yes.
How concerned are you about that issue?
My concern is what I've kind of talked to Johnny about, and I'll leave it at that. We've had our conversations, and like I've said in the past, when I talk to players independently, then I generally try to keep those conversations private.
Is there enough talent on the roster to finish these games you're talking about? You keep saying, you know, you just haven't been able to finish. Is there enough talent on the roster to finish with victories?
I think so. I really do. I mean, to me, it's no surprise. Like, okay, we haven't won, but close is not. There are no moral victories in this league. But I really don't feel like teams are just coming here and run us over the coals. I just don't feel like that. I don't think we've just been taken to the woodshed and teams have just kind of walked out of here and stomped on us and decided, hey, this team's terrible. I think that we've been in games, we've had a chance, we've had our opportunities to win, and we got to find a way to do that. And that comes to all of us. How does each man look at himself and decide, are they doing enough? I mean, there's a part of me that wishes I still had enough left in me to go suit up and play. I don't. And there's enough that I, you know, what else can I do? What else can I do? How can I help Pet? And to that point, I think he asked the question earlier, what am I doing to support Pet? Everything I can. Anything that I can do. I've made myself available in every capacity. So I will say this. I am passionate about the Browns, and I want the Browns to win. And I know fans are impatient, and they're growing even more impatient as we're not winning. But the reality is that I think we're doing a lot of good things. We just got to, you know, we got to find a way to win. And it sounds corny. It sounds, you know, cliche. It sounds like what somebody else may have said when they sat up here and the same thing transpired 8, 9, 10 years ago, whatever the case may have been. The reality is that there are good football players on this football team. We just got to find a way to push it over the line.
All right, mentioned the last one, the end of the movie. We haven't seen the end of the movie. Well, a lot of people here have seen the end of this movie, and it tends not to end very well. So you as the general manager of this team, how are you going to write a different script at the end of the movie?
The same way I've written the script already, is that you got to try to do things a little bit differently than people historically have done them. You know, you can't follow the same roadmap and get to a different destination. So in my mind, it comes down to, yeah, we do things a little bit differently than I think people have done historically. And with no risk comes no reward. And it doesn't mean we're going to be without bumps in the road. It doesn't mean we're going to struggle. Like, there are bumps. There are turns. I mean, there comes down to it where inevitably we got to find a way to, again, write the right end to the movie. And that's something we're going to have to focus on and something we're going to have to bring to fruition on our own.
That was Ray Farmer. When we come back, we will discuss his press conference. We'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. A lot of comments coming in on Twitter about the press conference as well. And we will also get into the mailbag as we wrap things up here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.